Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Advisor. My name is Lisa Urbanski, co-host of the show. And today's guest is George Haymaker. He is a former entrepreneur who faced some really difficult challenges, battling alcoholism, pain pill addiction, really bad anxiety, low self-esteem, and a mind that often felt like his worst enemy. So through deep inner work and relentless commitment to healing, he not only broke free from substance dependency, but he also learned how to dismantle the mental patterns and emotional pain that led him there in the first place. So he is living proof that recovery isn't about quitting, it's about becoming someone new. And he is here today to talk about the neuroscience impact of diet, nutrition, sleep, and mindfulness. And what that does to the brain. A lot of you guys have heard these terms, especially mindfulness lately. It's trending, and we really want to break down what it does neurologically to the brain. Thank you to our sponsors, Spreaker and iHeartRadio. Without you, this cannot be possible. And to our audience, we love you so much. Please do not forget to like and subscribe and leave any questions you might have for us or for George in the comments, and we'll be sure to answer them as best as we can. Welcome back, George. It's really good to see you again.
Great to see you, Lisa. Thanks for having me back. And hello, everyone.
Yes. So what's new in your world? What have you been up to?
Yeah, just doing my coaching thing. I'm meeting lots of great people and helping them optimize their brains, helping them with certain mental patterns they might be struggling with. So just really enjoying that, and it's really become the meaning and purpose in my life, and I just love it.
Oh, well, you're so knowledgeable. I've never had someone break down the science of addiction in a way that you did, and you can, and just so valuable. I really literally think of the brain in a new way, and the work you're doing is so important. So today we are talking about, diet, nutrition, sleep, and mindfulness. So I wanted to ask you, we wanted to discuss the importance of sleep, diet, nutrition. Before we get into that detail, I wanted to make a general comment about how we should view the brains.
So I had to start looking at my brain completely differently than I used to. And I think the most powerful shift that people can make is to start viewing their brains as high-performance systems, something that drives every part of their lives. It's basically ground zero for everything we experience, good and bad. Your brain isn't just a passenger in your life, it's the engine, the control panel, and the operating system behind how you think, feel, and behave and relate to others. But like any high-performance system, it's only as good as the, gas we put in it and the maintenance that it receives. That's where sleep, diet, nutrition, exercise, and mindfulness are so critical. These aren't just wellness trends, they're brain requirements. Sleep is your brain's reset system, and nutrition and diet are its fuel and building blocks. Exercise strengthens its function and clears stress chemistry. And mindfulness trains it to focus, regulate, and respond with intention. So when you start treating your brain like something you care for, like a member of your family, the results can be astonishing. View it as something that we can train, nourish, nurture, and optimize instead of just something that's along for the ride in our lives. So I encourage people to lead their brain instead of your brain leading you.
Absolutely. Someone told me today that, you're not your head, you're not your arm, you're not your foot, but like all of those things combined make us who we are. We got to take care of ourselves, got to take care of our brain.
Critical. And I never used to. So I kind of learned the hard way, and now I kind of build my day around these things. So these are necessities, and then I kind of fit work in and around these really important building blocks.
Oh, that's awesome. So, everyone loves a good night's sleep, including myself, but I don't always get a good night's sleep. The world is busy, there's a million things going on. So, what happens in the brain while we are sleeping, and why is not getting enough sleep not a good idea?
Yeah, so what we're after in sleep is sleep cycles, not just hours of sleep. And so sleep is really essential for consolidating memories of things that we learned during the previous day, and making learning from that day stick into memory. So sleep is not passive rest, it's actually the most metabolically active state for certain brain functions. So why we think that we're out cold, there's a whole lot going on. So think of your sleep as your brain's overnight cleaning crew and construction team. So the brain sleeps in 90-minute cycles, alternating between non-REM and REM sleep states in each of these cycles. These wave cycles aren't just phases, they're essential operating modes for certain types of mental and physical recovery. And so optimizing sleep means cycling through all of these different brainwave cycles within each sleep cycle, multiple times per night. So if we think about getting, let's say, 7.5 hours of sleep, each of these cycles is 90 minutes long. So that would be five cycles in 7.5 hours of sleep. And each of these brainwave cycles perform specific functions. The earlier cycles focus on deep repair, while later in the cycle emphasizes emotional processing. There's, like I said, there's five different brainwave cycles that we experience. The first one's beta, which is the, kind of a very fast-moving brain wave cycle that we go through as we're awake. It's the fast, focused thinking brain waves. These dominate during alert states and problem solving. And then as we begin to go to sleep, and it's kind of like the pre-sleep relaxation state, the waves begin to slow down, and that's associated with relaxation and drowsiness. This is kind of the transition zone before we begin to actually fall asleep. And then as we fall asleep, we head into light sleep. And these waves, again, begin to slow down even further. And they emerge as we enter light sleep. They calm the nervous system and begin to organize our short-term experiences. So the things that we experience during the day. And then we enter delta, the delta cycle, which is deep sleep. Which is the slowest brainwave cycle. And these are the most restorative brainwaves. So delta sleep handles tissue repair, immune defense, synaptic pruning, meaning neurons that we're no longer using get pruned out and taken out of our system. Deep memory consolidation. So it basically moves things from short-term memory to long-term memory. And brain detox, where we actually detoxify our brains. We get fluids that come up from our body, and it's kind of like a wash cycle, and it washes out our brain and pulls out the toxins and all the old neurons that we're not using anymore. So it's like neural housekeeping mode. And this is when the brain moves information. It's also when the brain moves information from short-term memory, which is where the hippocampus is in the brain, to long-term storage. The final stage is REM sleep, which I think gets a lot of publicity, and that stands for rapid eye movement. And that's where brainwave activity resembles waking states. It's very quick, but our body's still paralyzed. And so REM enables emotional memories to be processed. It's where dreams happen. It allows for creative problem solving. So during each of these 90-minute cycles during the night, of which we hopefully get five or six, we're going through each of these brainwave cycles within each 90 minutes. So there's a lot going on every 90 minutes, and then we cycle again, and then we cycle again. And we need to get, four to six of these, four minimum, but hopefully five or six, in order for our brain to fully reset and process and clean out everything that it needs to before we wake and start another day. So what happens when we don't get enough sleep? Well, it throws our brain into like survival mode. And so when we're sleep deprived, our brain shifts to short-term survival mechanisms. So cortisol increases, or the thinking part of our brain, the activity in there decreases because it wasn't fully reset from the proper sleep the night before. Makes it harder for us to focus, plan, and regulate emotions. So when you think about, you're not getting enough sleep and you wake up the next day and you're kind of ornery and not feeling it, that's what it's the result of. Your brain regions have not, and functions and systems have not properly reset.
Right.
The emotional centers of the brain go into overdrive. There's increased reactivity. We're more irritable. And there's a bunch of other things that happen as a result. And I think we feel these things during our waking hours. So here's some great tips to improve sleep. Go to bed and do a pre-sleep. So the time that we spend before we actually try to fall asleep is really critical. It's like sleep prep. We should be dimming lights, turning off all screens. Because when we're looking at screens, it tricks our brain into thinking it's still daylight. And
Wow, the
so,
blue light.
yeah, and so the melatonin can't process properly in the brain, which is what we need to begin to, go to sleep. And so blue light blocks melatonin, actually, which is our natural, the brain's natural sleep signal. So we
Right.
really should begin to wind down as we, well before we go to bed. It's important to keep your bedroom cool, dark, and quiet. Kind of treat it like a cave, or how dogs love kennels. Like it's a safe place for our brains to go. Really avoid caffeine, after 2 p.m. Because that stays in our system for quite a while. Try to avoid alcohol before bed and sweets, things that are gonna screw up our ability to. To naturally begin to drift, they disrupt our deep sleep architecture. So sleep isn't just optional recovery, it's a form of high performance brain training. When you give your brain high quality sleep, it repays you with much better mental performance the next day.
That brings us to mindfulness. First of all, I struggle with the screen, and I struggle with going to bed and putting down my phone. So I feel like that's like part of my routine is like scrolling, and I'm like completely disconnected. But it does keep me awake, and the caffeine after two is tough for me too. But those are great tips in terms of mindfulness. So mindfulness means a million different things, and it means something different to everybody. How would you define it, and how does it affect the brain?
So it's a skill, and it's training the brain to pay attention on purpose. So things like focus and attention can actually be trained. If you think about all the other things that our brain holds, all the other things we try to learn how to do, like right? Be good at our jobs, like you're great at podcasting, but you had to learn how to do that. Well, that's all that got stored in your brain. You had to train your brain to be good at it. You're a musician, you have to train your brain to be good at, playing the instrument, and so on and so forth. Well, all of these other things that we just kind of take for granted, like focus and attention, other just daily activities that we take for granted are all trainable. Even the patterns that you were just talking about, scrolling on your phone at inopportune times, those are all trainable patterns that can be trained in order to maximize your brain performance. I know it's hard to put it down, but that's because you develop a pattern to do so. So these are all very trainable things that we can train our brain to do so. What it really means is just paying attention on purpose to what you want to pay attention to in the present moment, without judgment or distractions. That's what mindfulness is. It's not about clearing our mind, it's about learning to observe it. Think of it as, switching from being the actor in the movie of your mind to being the director watching it from behind the camera. So a lot of this, it helps to become detached and look at yourself as a third person. And really look at your mind and yourself objectively instead of being wrapped up in it and held hostage by it. And
Right.
that's all a mindfulness skill, is being able to do that. There's a number of things that are involved in mindfulness, but it strengthens the brain's leadership center. The leadership center is the thought center, which is the prefrontal cortex. So when we practice focus and attention, it strengthens that part of our brain, allows the things that that front part of our brain does, which is focus, planning, emotional regulation, decision making, impulse control, strategy. It allows all those things to become more effective when we're able to lock in and stay locked in. And the thinking part of our brain, which again is the front part, is kind of on a seesaw with the emotional part of our brain, the limbic network. And that limbic network is more in the middle of our brain. And they're kind of on a seesaw, and they're meant to balance each other out. So, obviously the emotional center of our brain, the limbic network, is more emotionally based, and the front part of our brain is more logic based, and they're meant to kind of counterbalance each other. And so mindfulness really helps us calm the emotional center of our brain. So that's why, people do meditation and breathing and focus-based exercises. Could be yoga, could be anything that you're training your brain to lock in on, because it also helps calm them, right? It quiets the reactive emotional part of our brain. So it's also very helpful in that way. It rewires what's called the default mode network, which is another region or network in the brain, which is linked to rumination, like when we ruminate over and over about things, when we're self-critical, when we do mental time travel, worrying about the future, replaying the past. Mindfulness trains our brain to interrupt that loop and return it to presence. So when you think about, breathing and doing meditation, you're always focused on the present, allowing distractions to come and go, and locking back in. So when you're doing that, it really affects all other parts of the brain, allowing them to reset, calm down, re-regulate themselves, and return to normal baseline. So mindfulness also helps a lot with mental and emotional health. It reduces anxiety, increases our ability to regulate our emotions. Like I said, it boosts focus and attention span, and it increases resilience, our ability to kind of bounce back from things and take setbacks and respond instead of react. So some ways to practice mindfulness, even if you're busy, or anchor to your breath, notice, really focus on breathing, even if it's just for a few minutes. That's all it really takes. If you find yourself worked up or activated, 3 minutes of this, 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, where you're just locked in on your breath, like you're allowing things to enter your mind, but then you allow them to just pass through. You're objectively observing everything without judgment. And if you start doing this regularly, it's a skill. You get really good at it. Scan your body, really. Look at all parts of your body, really observe what's going on. Listen to the signals that are coming from within your body up into your brain. Pay attention to those things. Notice things that you can, at any one particular moment, just pause and notice things that you can think, hear, or feel. And it just helps connect you to the world again. I think a lot of times our minds just take us with them and start to ruminate and future trip and ruminate about the past. And this whole idea of mindfulness just brings us back to the present, diffuses, quiets the emotional part of the brain, diffuses, our tripping, and allows us to just really settle in and become grounded again. So, just think of mindfulness as like mental reps. Every time you catch your brain wandering, bring it back. You're basically building a muscle of awareness. And it's not just a calming technique, it's brain training for a conscious living. The more you practice it, the better you get. And it really helps build these skills over time.
Absolutely. I struggle with that all the time, and I think a lot of our listeners can relate to constantly being 10 steps ahead of our brain, and instead of focusing on what's happening in the moment. And that's where we get anxiety, and that's where we lose ourselves in emotion because we're just reacting instead of actually feeling and processing things. So those are all really, really great tips. So let's talk about exercise. So most of us exercise our bodies, but how do you contend that exercise is just as important for the brain?
It's critical actually. Reprograms the brain basically. It delivers blood flow, oxygen, and nutrients to the brain. So, just picture you're exercising, you feel yourself starting to get worked up. There's an increase of your breath rate. You start to sweat, you can feel your blood flowing. Well, it's flowing to your brain as well. And so, that's doing is delivering important blood flow, oxygen, and nutrients to the brain that supports all of these areas of the brain. Helps deliver what they need to perform well. It also helps support neuroplasticity. So neuroplasticity is the brain's natural ability to change, adapt, and evolve. So, for example, these patterns that you referenced earlier. About scrolling on your phone and it's hard to put it down. Let's say you wanted to change that pattern, or any other patterns that that are unhelpful to you in your life. The brain needs the appropriate inputs in order for it to work and make the changes that you'd like to make. And so changing those patterns actually involves neuroplasticity, which is the movement of the neurons around in your brain so that they're repatterning themselves after the new habits that you would like to create. You've got to start to practice those habits and then the neurons will follow and move. Well, the neurons, neuroplasticity won't work as well if you're not, giving it the right inputs, one of which is exercise. The other thing that, happens when we exercise is there's a thing called BDNF, brain derived neurotrophic factor, which is a protein that comes from the body and it gets delivered to the brain during exercise and it's like fertilizer. And so it really helps all the workings of the brain perform at a much higher level. Protein, amino acids are the building block of all of our structures in our body, including the neurons and everything that helps form our brain. So BDNF is a critical component, and it doesn't get delivered to the brain in anywhere near the same amount as when we're exercising. I think we've all noticed when we exercise that we feel better, right? It improves our mood and improves our mental clarity. So it actually increases feel-good neurotransmitters, so dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, anandamide, which is for calm and well-being. All these different feel-good chemicals are increased as we exercise. I'm sure that we've all noticed that we can be stressed out. We go to the gym and exercise, and all of a sudden we don't feel as stressed out. And that's because cortisol, which is the stress hormone, enters our body when we're stressed, and then when we exercise, it drains out of us. So exercise is a great tool for regulating stress, regulating our nervous system. We have two different states of our nervous system: sympathetic, which is the aroused, activated state, and the parasympathetic state, which is more rest and relaxed. And exercise really helps level out those two states. If we're overly activated, which can cause stress, it helps really bring us back into a more rest and relaxed state. And so it just has so many benefits for us, for the brain as well as our body. I think a lot of us think about exercising for our bodies, but it does just as much, if not more, good for the brain. And it doesn't take a lot. What it really involves is being consistent. The brain wants repeated exercise during the week, even if it's just 20 or 30 minutes of, aerobic intense exercise that, 4 to 5 times a week, where you can deliver this blood, oxygen, and BDNF to the brain for 20 to 30 minute spurts. I actually try to work out right around noon to one, because I put in a good morning of work. I feel a little fatigued, and I go work out for a while, and I just feel completely rejuvenated. So,
Nice.
you can time it during times of your day when you feel like you need that boost, right? When you feel fatigued, I'm going to slot my workout in at this time in order to rejuvenate my brain so that I can have another good section of the day.
Yeah. A
So
lot
go ahead.
of people go for a cup of coffee. We used to be that person who just like work from morning, get to my office. I leave at my office at 6 p.m. and I just like drink coffee after coffee after coffee. But really, if you get up and you walk around for even 20 minutes, like you said, go for a brisk walk. That's going to give you so much more energy than just sitting there and putting all that coffee in your body. So
Yeah.
important for the brain.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So you've talked to us a lot and given us so many like insightful things about how we eat, sleep, exercise, and mindfulness. So are these topics that you cover with your brain education and coaching with clients?
Yeah, sure do. We didn't even cover the diet and nutrition component.
Oh, we missed it. We got to go back then. We got to go back.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, wants to talk about food,
Everybody
right?
wants to talk about food. I completely overlooked that part. So, yeah, I mean, you talk about diet, nutrition separately, right? But I know they're related. Are they related? How so? And please help us understand how they impact our brains and therefore our lives.
Yeah, sure. So diet is what we eat and how we eat it. So it's our food choices, the patterns. Are we eating meals? Are we snacking? The portion sizes and the time of the day that we eat them. That's our diet. Nutrition is what those foods that we eat provide. So the fuel and the building blocks that our body and brain extract from the diet. And so, diet is daily fuel for brain power, right? There are very specific foods that the body, that the brain wants us to eat in order for it to perform at its best. It's actually the brain is the hungriest organ in our body. It's only about 3 pounds, representing just about 2% of our weight, but it burns up to 25% of our daily energy. So it's the workhorse. The next organ that burns almost as much, but not quite as much, is the liver, believe it or not. So think of the brain as a high-performance sports car. It needs consistent quality fuel, not just kind of what's lying around. So it's really important to think about when you're shopping, why am I eating what I'm eating, and what is it doing, not just for my body, but for my brain. So what happens when we eat lower poor quality food, low nutrition or poor quality food? What can happen is that the blood sugar crashes. So it'll spike, for eating simple carbs or sugar or processed food, blood sugar will spike, and then it will crash. And what will happen then is, we've all felt the after effects of eating a meal where we get really tired, right? We get reduced focus, we have low mental endurance. Our moods are a little wacky. So the brain runs on glucose, which is the energy that's derived from food. So it goes into our stomach, is broken down, and glucose is what enters our bloodstream, and that is what is the energy that our body uses. So not all glucose is created equal. The refined carbs or the simple carbs, which are the sugars, the white breads, we get these fast spikes and crashes, as we just talked about. Preferably, we want to eat complex carbs. So there are things that will have fiber attached to them. And so what it does is it slows the digestion, and that sugar from the food, the glucose, can't get into our bloodstream as quickly. That fiber forms like a gelatin. And it's just it only emits gradual amounts of sugar or glucose into the bloodstream. So that's why we don't feel the spiking of blood sugar and then the crashing afterwards. So things like oats, sweet potatoes, brown rice, quinoa. I noticed when we got on the air that you were eating a bowl of quinoa. Good for you.
Yeah, I've got a whole bowl right
There you go.
here.
But you are eating some complex carbs. Hydration is super critical also. So we think about drinking water, right? But do we think about it as far as our brain goes? I mean, we think about it to flush our system, but we don't think that the brain is as needy as in need of water as the rest of our body is. Dehydration can impair our ability to focus, our attention on anything. It focuses our ability to remember things. The speed at which our brain will process will slow down. And we're supposed to drink about half of our body weight is what we're supposed to drink in terms of ounces of water. So I'm 260 pounds, so I should be drinking about 130 ounces of water
Do you?
a day. I drink water all day. Every time I drink anything, it's water. The only other thing I drink is a probiotic soda. It's kind of my cocktail at night because I don't drink anymore, obviously. But otherwise, I'm always drinking water with every meal to make sure that I try to get enough. I'm not sure I get 130 ounces.
Yeah, that's a lot, hey?
It is a lot. Although I drink quite a bit while I'm sleeping, believe it or not, because I'll get thirsty. Maybe I get 130 in.
Nice.
And so on the nutrition side, so again, protein is critical because that's what our neurotransmitters are built from. It's what our neurons are built from. And so we want to try to eat as much protein, based on our body weight, as we should. If we eat too much protein, it'll turn into fat, but we need to eat significant amounts of protein in order to fuel the building blocks that help keep the brain going. Omega-3s are super important. We can find those in things like salmon, sardines, a lot of different seeds and nuts. Omega-3 strengthen the cell membranes and improve the neurotransmitter signaling that happens in the brain. There's a lot of micronutrients that our brain wants, things like magnesium, which calms us, B vitamins, which supports energy and mood, zinc and iron, which help regulate memory and attention. And we also want to have a healthy gut because the gut and the brain talk to each other. So wanting to make sure that we eat enough probiotic, things that will develop enough of the happy bacteria, the healthy bacteria in our stomachs, so it can police the stomach, create a healthy gut. A lot of our neurotransmitter serotonin is actually made in the gut. So it's important to, healthy diet, not just for the gut, but also for the brain. Some realistic tips about diet and nutrition is to, try to build every meal around protein, fiber, and healthy fats. You want to try to combine all of them in a meal. So a lot of times I'll have maybe lentil soup, which is a starchy carbohydrate, a complex carb. But I'll put some chicken in it, which is the protein, and then I'll drizzle some olive oil in it. So right there, I'm combining a healthy fat with the fiber with the protein. And it slows the digestion down and allows the slow, steady release of nutrients and glucose into our blood so we're not getting the spiking and the crashing.
Right.
We want to eat whole foods, colorful foods. Try to stay away from things that are in packages and boxes and cans. So as much fresh whole food as that you can buy, the better. Super brain friendly, full of nutrients that your brain needs. Hydrate throughout the day. Include fermented foods. Really good for a healthy gut. That's how you can get your probiotics. So things like yogurt, kimchi, sauerkraut. I eat a ton of sauerkraut. You can also take a probiotic or drink probiotic sodas. Those are also great for you. And minimize refined sugar and alcohol, which really disrupt brain function and our energy and also memory. So yeah, those are some helpful tools around diet and nutrition.
Well, I'm sure glad you made me circle back because those are all such great tips for people. They call the stomach the second brain, right? And so what we're putting in our bodies is directly affecting the way that we think, thus the way we feel, and then the way we act. So those are really, really great tips. So now I'm going to circle back to my question before we went back to the food and nutrition, diet, nutrition. So all the topics that we cover today, do you cover these with people when you're coaching them in your classes, courses?
Yeah, I mean, it's a critical component because this really sets you up for success, right? If you're not taking care of the basics, I mean, when we're working with people to transform their mental states, or maximize, brain capability and capacity and performance, you can't do that if you're not getting the right quality and quantity of sleep, eating the right things in the right amounts at the right times of the day. If you're not getting regular exercise and if you're not training your brain for better focus and attention. So these are really just setting the stage to put your brain in the best possible position to succeed with creating the best mental life. So it all starts with the foundation and the building blocks, and these are the four main ones.
Amazing. So where can people find you?
Yeah, check out my website, georgehaymaker.com. And also, as part of these programs that I do, they're personalized, customized diet, nutrition, exercise, mindfulness, and sleep plans. So we really look at what works in your life and create a program that works for the other thing demands that you have in your life, but also it needs to be enjoyable. So it's not like here, eat these foods. We select from a list of proteins and a list of complex carbs, a list of healthy fats that you like, right? Because th this is all meant to be fun and create a life that's enjoyable. Because your brain's not going to want to do any of this stuff unless it finds reward and enjoyment out of it. So come check out the website, georgehaymaker.com, and there's a link there for a free discovery call where we can spend 30 minutes together talking about what's going on in your life and how I might be able to help you. You'll also find me on LinkedIn at George Haymaker. I'd love to have you as a follower. I do a lot of content on LinkedIn and send out free tips and brain hacks as well. So please follow me on LinkedIn.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here today and for sharing such valuable information about brain health.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, awesome. I look forward to the next episode. And if you guys have not yet heard the episodes that we did with George earlier this year, please go back and listen to those episodes. He really shares about his journey through addiction, how those experiences have helped him to teach his clients on how to rewire the brain. So interesting. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, I'm Lisa Urbanski with The Advisor. Bye, everyone.